13-21-262-CV, Aaron and Franklin Engineering, Inc. versus Chris Zodi, DBA New Millennium Construction Group.
May it please the court. The issue before this court is whether the trial court abused its discretion in denying the motion to dismiss where the action filed by the appellee New Millennium is for damages arising out of the provision of professional services such that a certificate of merit under Chapter 150 of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code was required. Section 150.002 states that a certificate of merit shall be filed when the complaint it broadly applies to any action for damages arising out of the provision of professional services by a licensed or registered professional. In this case, New Millennium has alleged that Aaron and Franklin, the appellant here, an engineering firm, was deficient in their obligations as appointed qualified inspectors in inspecting and supervising the repair of a structure that required Texas Windstorm Insurance Association certification for this windstorm insurance. It's undisputed here that the appellant is a licensed or registered professional. It's a professional engineering firm. So the only issue before the trial court was whether when we compare the allegations in the third-party petition to the definition of the practice of engineering, whether the action is for damages arising out of provision of professional services. And in this case, because when you do that analysis, it does implicate or it does it is arising out of the provision of Aaron and Franklin's professional services, the certificate of merit was required. And subsection E of 150.002 requires that the trial court shall dismiss the action. So failure to dismiss the action in the trial court was an abuse of discretion.
Counselor, when you look at the pleadings, can you tell us specifically, if that's the standard, what was pled that implicates that it was engineering professional services that were being talked about?
Certainly. So the practice of engineering, first I'll start there, is defined in the Texas Occupations Code, and it's the performance of or offer or attempt to perform any public or private service or creative work, the adequate performance of which requires engineering education, training, and experience in applying special knowledge or judgment of the mathematical, physical, or engineering sciences to that service or creative work. And it includes several.
But they're saying that they didn't hire you as an engineer. They hired you as an appointed qualified inspector. So that this job that they got hired for, and dovetailing it to Justice Longoria, where in the pleadings do they? I know that what the statute reads and what engineering means, and normally, you know, that's not an issue. But in this case, an appointed qualified inspector is what's being said, and that's what they're being sued for. So where in the petition, aside from what engineering services is, do they allege that would be an engineering degree because they got hired as an appointed inspector?
Correct. And that's the argument that is being advanced, that if they're hired as an appointed qualified inspector, an engineering firm could never be performing the practice of engineering. But that ignores what the statute defines the practice of engineering as. It also would require this court to essentially add another carve out to Section 150 that says this chapter does not apply to any engineering firm serving as an appointed qualified inspector. So when looking
there seems to be some conflict between the insurance code and the engineering chapter 150, because am I correct that I read somewhere that the inspector doesn't have to be an engineer to get this windstorm inspection?
So there is there's a difference between a certification for ongoing improvements and a certification for construction, one of which the construction, I guess, requires that the engineer affix their seal, that it requires that this person who's certifying this work be an engineer. And so that's the point that's being made, is that, well, because it doesn't have to be an engineer for the ongoing improvement, then it could never be the practice of engineering. But that ignores that if, in this case, we're looking at the facts of this case and how they've pled it, they allege, New Millennium, that they contracted with Aaron and Franklin. They sought out an engineering firm to perform this particular service. If, as accepting their argument, that it didn't have to be an engineering firm, they could have selected anybody else.
And in this case, it doesn't have to be an engineer specifically, but it was.
But it was.
It was an engineer that performed it. They don't have to under the provision for ongoing improvements, but in this case, they did.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct. In this case, and that's what we're limited to, what they have alleged in the petition is that New Millennium contracted with this engineering firm to perform the work. We don't know. That's not within the record. But for whatever reason, they chose an engineer to perform this particular service. So, and they do cite this section. Justice, you had asked about where in the petition specifically are we talking about where is it defined that it's the practice of engineering, or where is it implicated that it's the practice of engineering? They specifically cite New Millennium in their third-party petition, this section 5.4621 of the Texas Administrative Code, and it requires that the appointed qualified inspector here as New Millennium, or I'm sorry, Aaron and Franklin was performing in this case, must inspect for compliance with the applicable windstorm building code on each ongoing improvement during each major construction phase, list several different stages of construction, supervising the installation of windborne debris to protection and installation mechanical equipment. And then New Millennium alleges that Aaron and Franklin failed to undertake or perform these services. It says that they allege that they failed to act with reasonable care and competence, that they failed to inspect the work properly, that the services were supposed to be in a good and workmanlike manner according to industry practices. So industry practices here, it's an engineering firm, and without defect. And it alleges that the damages that were caused were within the scope of Aaron and Franklin's work or services that it contracted with them to perform. And so when we compare those allegations, and specifically within this section 5.4621 of the administrative code, when we look at the legislature and the occupations code has given a few kind of examples of, it's kind of a non-exhaustive list of what could be considered the practice of engineering. And it relevant here, these allegations implicate at a minimum subsection 1, which states the consultation, investigation, evaluation, analysis, planning, engineering for performing program management, engineering for testing or evaluating materials for construction or other engineering use. Subsection 9 states engineering for review of the construction or installation of engineered works to monitor compliance with drawings or specifications. So if Aaron and Franklin is being hired to review for the construction and installation of the engineered works and monitor for compliance and for the purpose of issuing this certification for the Texas windstorm insurance, then that would be considered, fall within the definitions or at least examples of where the Texas Occupations Code has said that's the practice of engineering. And there's also a catch-all, subsection 12, that states any other professional service necessary for the planning, progress, or completion of an engineering service. And that the case on point here is this Carter and Burgess versus the Sardari opinion. And in that case, a woman had cut her arm on the inside of a door, and she had sued the owners and the contractor for the project, or who built the restaurant apparently. And then the contractor named as a responsible third party an architecture firm. So the plaintiff went ahead and added that architecture firm as a defendant. And she alleged that the architecture firm was the project manager overseeing the installation of the door and the project in general. And the plaintiff there made the very same argument that's being advanced here. And that's that when it was the architecture firm in that case was or allegedly committing these negligent acts, that it was not functioning as an architect, but rather that it was merely performing the function of an unlicensed project manager, which is work that allegedly does not require an architectural license. And so that's what the plaintiff in Sardari argued, that here it didn't implicate the special knowledge and training of an architect because somebody, a non-architect, could perform that job. And the court reviewed the allegations in the petition and compared it to the practice of architecture as it's defined in the occupations code, and it disagreed. It said, when we're looking at these specific allegations, they fit into the statutory definition of the practice of architecture, and that they involve observing the construction, modification, or alteration of work to evaluate conformance with architectural plans and specifications. And it had a few other examples of where the allegations from her petition fit within those definitions. So that case is directly on point here. It's a slightly different definition for the practice of architecture, but the analysis is the same. And in this case here,
I have a question regarding the Sardar case. That I acknowledge the similarities, but given the arguments that are being made in this case, and given our standard of review, can we say it was a clear abuse of discretion for the trial court to not require the certificate of merit?
Justice Contreras, I believe the standard is it doesn't have to be a clear abuse of discretion, but just an abuse of discretion. And when we're reading or when we're reviewing whether it's an abuse of discretion, the court doesn't have any discretion in applying and determining what the law is or applying the law to the facts. And one thing that I would like to highlight here as it relates to that is the court in this case considered this affidavit from Rolando Rubiano, who was allegedly a engineer. And in this case, it was not.
Allegedly? So we're questioning whether he was an engineer?
I'm sorry?
Allegedly? So you're questioning that he was an engineer?
I won't dispute that.
Okay, thank you.
I'll concede he was an engineer. But I do take issue with some of the allegations, or I'm sorry, the statements that he had within his affidavit.
Do we have to decide that the court improperly considered that affidavit in order to get to the abuse of discretion? If we decide the affidavit was properly before the court, then is there any abuse of discretion, as Justice Chief Contreras stated?
I don't believe that this court has to find that it was an abuse of discretion for the court to consider that affidavit in order to decide that it was an abuse of discretion to deny the motion to dismiss, if I've answered the question.
So we can still consider the affidavit and still find that it's an abuse of discretion?
Well,
even if the trial court had that affidavit in front of it?
I believe the court could, yes, because there is really no the analysis that was required was we compare the allegations to the petition, or I'm sorry, the allegations to the definition of practice of engineering. So the consideration of the affidavit really didn't have any impact, I guess, on that analysis. But regardless, I don't believe that that consideration of it was appropriate, because essentially what the affidavit was doing was performing the trial court's job, which is saying, here's the law, and it doesn't apply here because X, Y, and Z, and that's not proper. Those are improper legal conclusions that Aaron and Franklin objected.
Did they object as to a legal conclusion on these different
portions
of the affidavit that were defining standards of law?
Yes. There were objections that it was improper legal conclusions, that there was no personal knowledge. So also within the affidavit, it does state things like Aaron and Franklin was hired to do X, Y, and Z, but there's no statement of how Mr. Rubiano has any personal knowledge of what Aaron and Franklin was hired for. It doesn't state he reviewed the contract. It doesn't state he reviewed even the petition. And really what he was doing was reciting allegations within the petition, which without establishing any basis for personal knowledge. So there was those objections were made, and also just a general objection that really the issue is an issue of law, and we're comparing the allegations in the pleading to the practice of engineering. One thing I would like to also highlight is that if the court were to accept the arguments that are being made here, essentially what it would do would create a new carve-out in this Chapter 150. So 150.002 expressly carves out any action or suit or action for the payment of fees arising out of the provision of professional services. So New Millennium's argument here requires the court to add an additional carve-out, that it doesn't apply when an engineer or licensed professional is performing windstorm certification work, or that it doesn't apply if it's any work which under a separate set of facts or any number of set of facts could possibly be performed in some portion, at least, by an unlicensed professional. And that's not the law. And that's not supported by the case law either. I see my time is up, so I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Kyle Giacco, and I represent Chris Zodi, DBA New Millennium Construction Group. New Millennium hired Aran and Franklin for a very specific task, a task that is governed by the Department of Insurance, not the Board of Engineers. There are very specific regulations about how this task is performed, who performs them, and what it is and what is necessary. And those are all set by the Department of Insurance. And as we go through the statutes, it's clear that this type of inspection can be done by a non-engineer and thus is implicitly and explicitly not the performance of professional engineering services.
Even though it's in this case it was done by an engineer, you're saying that it still doesn't make a difference?
That's correct, Your Honor, because not everything an engineer does is professional engineering services. Otherwise, you wouldn't need this laundry list of things to define what professional engineering services are. You could just say anything an engineer does is professional engineering services. Here, this is not, if you look, for example, I think what makes this clear is the Occupations Code 1001-004, where it talks about the legislative purpose and intent of this. And it says, the legislature intends that the privilege of practicing engineering is entrusted only to a person licensed and practicing under this chapter. Only a person licensed under this chapter may engage in the practice of engineering. So if it is a task that can be done by a non-engineer, it's not the practice of engineering. And in this case, it is explicit that a non-engineer can do this task, do these inspections, and provide these certifications.
I agree with that, except for the fact that it would seem that your petition at times calls for engineering. Instead of, i.e., I'm going to hire a non-engineer, I'm going to hire an engineering because I want an engineering to do this type of inspection, and you are now suing them because you did use an engineering and expected engineering services, non-engineering services.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. Okay. There are two ways to get this type of inspection. You can hire a TDI inspector, or you can hire an appointed qualified inspector. In order to have this inspection done, it has to be done by a qualified inspector. And these terms are kind of similar, so we have to be a little careful. So for this inspection to be done, it has to be done by a qualified inspector. There's two ways that there can be a qualified inspector. It can be appointed by the TDI, or it can be an engineer that goes through the process and gets appointed as an appointed qualified inspector. The point is, with regard to getting the certifications and getting the inspection, they both do exactly the same task. They're subject to the same standards that are set not by the Board of Engineering, but by the Texas Department of Insurance.
The certification is by the Department of Insurance, not by engineering, right?
That's correct.
It's a separate certification they have to undergo.
Yes, and
I've had them done at my house, and I don't remember what they were.
So I think one of the things that makes it perfectly clear that these inspections, and we're talking about ongoing inspections of ongoing improvement, and one of the things that can confuse this is there's also inspections of completed improvements. In that case, it requires an actual engineer to put a seal on it.
Aren't you asking us, though, to change 150 and add a clause saying that ongoing improvements are excluded from this?
Absolutely not, Your Honor, because 150 is a list. There's nothing in there in 150 that says the word inspection. And it certainly doesn't say Included in here are these TDI inspections. And when you read 150 in conjunction with 2210-2251C, I think this is, makes it very clear.
2251?
Sorry, 2210-2251C of the Texas Insurance Code.
Jeez.
Yeah, and it doesn't help. And it doesn't help that the it's 221-250, 221-2515.
It's 2515, I believe.
Okay, but the one I want you to look at is 2251.
I'm looking at all of them.
Okay, so but the specific language about the site is in 2251. So in I'll actually start at the beginning. 2215 says that to issue a certificate of compliance, which was what we hired them to do, you have to have a qualified inspector as defined under 2210-254. 2210-254 says a qualified inspector can be the person appointed by the TDI, non-engineer, or an engineer, first under one and two, respectively. Then if you look, and they're talking about specifically these inspections of ongoing improvement. If you look at our allegations, they're all having to do with ongoing improvements. But at the 2210-2251 is enforcement authority. It says in A, the department has exercised exclusive overall, I'm sorry, let me read it. My notes are incomplete, so let me go to the actual wording. Okay. In A, it says the department has exclusive authority over all matters relating to the appointment and oversight of qualified inspectors for the purpose of this chapter and to the physical inspection of structures for the purposes of determining whether to issue a certificate of compliance under section 2210-2515D. That's what we're complaining about, is the issuance of a certificate under 2210-2515D. Department of Insurance has exclusive authority over the appointment and oversight and sets the standards for these inspections, not Department of Insurance. And these inspections can be done by both engineers and non-engineers. It then says, and B, that this commissioner of the Department of Insurance shall establish the criteria to ensure a person seeking appointment as qualified inspector. And again, there are appointed qualified inspectors and TDI inspectors, both of which are qualified inspectors. Under the subchapter, possess the knowledge, understanding, and professional competence to perform windstorm inspections. Therefore, the issue of the standard of care here is governed by the Department of Insurance, not the Department of Engineering, and the inspection is the same regardless of which person does it. And finally, in C.
Does that training, though, however, that they
right,
receive?
Let him tell us what's under C, because he's...
Okay, so C. So C, I think, is the key here.
Oh, good. C is the key. Oh,
C is the key.
Subsection B applies only to the determination concerning the appointment of qualified inspectors under this chapter. The exclusive jurisdiction of the department under this section does not apply to the practice of engineering, as defined by section 1001.003. Occupations codes, or to the license issued, qualifications required, determinations made, order issued, judgment rendered, or other actions of the board operating under Chapter 1001 Occupations Codes, the Board of Engineering. In other words, it is making a explicit distinction between these inspections in the practice of engineering.
And of course, there's no case law in Texas on that.
No, it isn't. No, there's not. But I think this is clear because what the, yeah. the cases say. Well, the issue here, and again, this is an abuse of discretion standard.
Right. Not a clear one.
But still, did the court abuse its discretion in not requiring a certificate of merit? And in this case, we pointed out quite clearly that this inspection does not require someone to be an engineer. If a non-engineer can do it, and the standard of care is that of a non-engineer, but is the standard of care set by the Department of Insurance, this is not something that requires a certificate of merit from an engineer.
What about the fact that they're saying that the fact that your pleadings, your third-party pleadings, make it an engineering issue because the way it's worded, I think there's something about professionalism and stuff like that.
All of our pleadings specifically complain about faults in the inspection having to do with ongoing improvements pursuant to these chapters and these certifications, and the fact that basically they told us this would meet the certifications and it didn't, of ongoing improvements, that we would get the certificate that says we pass on this ongoing improvements that was necessary pursuant to the Department of Insurance. And our complaint is they said that, but then it didn't. We had to have I'm not directly involved in the actual facts of this case, but as I understand, what happened was someone had to be hired to redo the work and then correct a bunch of problems that were not detected by Aron and Franklin. And that's the crux of the third party petition.
Is that how you distinguish Sardari? I mean, we don't have to agree with our sister court, but we try to.
So Sardari is distinguishable on two points.
You said that the pleadings there, the allegations that they made in the Sardari case, fell within the definitions of the provision of architectural services. You're saying your pleadings do not.
Yeah, and I would say for two reasons. One, Sardari is specifically, they made a general claim. They were hired in Sardari to just be, they tried to say that these guys are overseers of the work, not architects. But one of the things they complained about that Sardari, or in that case, was that the architect did not properly ensure that it conformed with the architectural plans. And they said that specifically falls under 1051.01.7c, observing the construction, modification, or alteration of the work to evaluate conformance with architectural plans and specifications described in paragraph B. In that case, though, it was a generalized, there was no specific thing they were hired to do. Here, they were hired to do something that conforms with the Department of Insurance requirements. This was not they were hired to just supervise the work in general. This was, we want you to give us a certificate that will get us past the Texas windstorm requirements. That sets the requirements. All of the requirements are based on what's set by the Department of Insurance, not the Board of Engineering. And that, because that is the specific, and in Sardari, they basically said, they didn't explain why this isn't the practice of engineering. I have an explanation. The explanation is they were hired for a very discrete task, and that discrete task can be done by non-engineers. And by statute, in the specific definition under the Occupations Code, engineering services is something that has to be done by an engineer. And that's not the case here. And the statutes allow a non-engineer to do it. The standard of care is not that of an engineer. The standard of care will be set by the requirements of the Department of Insurance. And therefore, no certificate of merit was required in this case. With regard to the affidavit of Rolando Rubiano, I think that's a bit of a red herring. Basically, the affidavit just goes through all the regs that I just discussed and some more. But what's significant about him is he is both a member of the a member of the Board of Professional Engineers and Land Surveyors of the actual board, and he is an appointed qualified inspector. So basically, he was offered up to provide information to assist the court on standards in the industry and how this has been treated in the industry.
Do you know if he had any personal knowledge of this case?
He is a retained expert and was provided information about the facts. Honestly, but all he was doing was basing it on the allegations and the saying that these allegations did not require a certificate of merit.
Was he designated as an expert?
I don't think we had gotten that far. And honestly, he's the one who would probably do the certificate of merit. But we did not, there was not one, in our opinion, required.
And without the affidavit, if it should have been excluded, you think the trial court would have reached the same result?
Yes, absolutely. All the affidavit does is explain this, you know, basically gives an explanation of these regulations and statutes. It is not, yes, the court is the ultimate expert. The affidavit was only offered to assist the court in going through rather Byzantine regulations and statutes. Just to address one other thing with regard to, should the court disagree with everything I just said, the appropriate remedy here is to remand for the trial court to determine whether the dismissal should be with or without prejudice. And we've cited case law to that effect. And there's no basis for this court to reach the issue of whether it should be with or without prejudice.
So you're saying we don't have authority to render if we're reversing?
Right.
Correct, Your Honor, that basically the issue here, the Texas Supreme Court and, sorry, I'll give you the cite. Both the Houston Court of Appeals, looking at similar issues, found that the appropriate remedy was to remand to determine whether dismissal should be with or without prejudice. That's the TRW Engineers versus Hussein Street Buildings, 608 Southwest 3rd, 317, citing Paternal Energy LLC versus Brewington Engineering Limited. In that case, the Supreme Court held, noted that the dismissal would be without prejudice, and then just, they didn't actually distress it, but they then remanded it to, for the trial court to determine whether it should be with or without prejudice.
Okay. Very good.
If the court doesn't have any further questions, I'll give back a couple of minutes.
We appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
We're good. Thank you.
Just a couple of points I wanted to highlight. As the court mentioned, with all the different statutes and the different language, I think one of the comments was that it's clear as mud. However, it does seem confusing, but really, at the end of the day, the analysis is very clear. According to the case law, we look at the allegations and we compare it to the practice of engineering. And the fact that something could have...
The allegations seem to follow the Texas Department of Insurance of what these inspectors are supposed to do, and at least from listening to Appalee, it says, and these are not engineering. So how do, you know, my issue is looking at the insurance code and looking at the, you know, Chapter 150, and how do we meld those together? That's what becomes confusing to us.
Well, I believe that the legislature has stated what is the practice of engineering. And the legislature didn't say it's, you know, if the determinative factor is if something could be done, at least in part, by somebody who's not an engineer. And it didn't say that it's not the practice of engineering if the standard of care is actually set by the Department of Insurance, or it didn't say that the practice of engineering can only be if a seal is required to be affixed as it relates to the construction and versus the ongoing improvements. What the legislature has determined is that we're looking at whether it requires the applying of any special knowledge or judgment of this engineer, this licensed and registered professional. So I believe that what New Millennium is asking this court to do, and what if it's allowed to stand that the trial court's decision, is that under no set of facts could an engineering firm ever, if they're serving as an appointed qualified inspector, could they ever be providing professional services? And that's a bright line rule that doesn't exist. That's not written into the statute. And so, again, I think the analysis is very clear. We have to take it case by case. We have to review the allegations. We have to take them as they come. There can't be a rule, at least the legislature has not yet created a rule that says, if they're serving as an appointed qualified inspector, they could never be practicing engineering. And I think just kind of a brief analogy, I guess, would be, two people could read a document. I could pay somebody $20 to read a document. It could be an attorney or it could be a layperson. If the attorney is reviewing the document, just the mere fact that somebody else could review it too for me, they could read it just the same way an attorney could, does that mean that I'm not practicing law if I as an attorney am reviewing the document? I mean, the fact that a non-engineer could, under some other set of facts, perform this same work is not the determinative factor.
Do you think, Counselor, the fact that in this case that an engineering company was used automatically holds them to a higher standard because of their professional certification and experience?
Well, I think that the legislature has when enacting section or chapter 150, it applies it very broadly to any action for damages arising out of the provision of professional services. So whether that holds the engineering firm to a higher standard, I'm not sure, but the legislature has said we're going to broadly say if you're trying to sue an engineering firm, an architecture firm, or whatever other ones qualify under here, there's going to be a certain threshold that you have to meet in order to show that what they did was negligent for purposes of suing them. And that was the intent, I suppose, in enacting that chapter 150. And then very, very briefly with the affidavit, I mean, counsel stated that his affidavit did was just look at the allegations and then discuss whether they're the practice of engineering. And as I said in my prior argument, and what was also argued to the trial court, is that is exactly what the court was supposed to do. So the affidavit was really improper, full of legal conclusions that it really wasn't relevant at the end of the day. Unless the court has any questions, I believe that concludes my time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The case will be under submission.